Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, May 1st, 2018. With me today, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Guten Morgen. Wie geht es Ihnen?
And
that's how's it going, Jeff?
Oh, der Flederhosen, muchachos. Kelly Gumont, how are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to figure out how to change John's localization settings so he does the rest of the show in English.
Oh, yeah.
Requires a glass of scotch.
Well, to get it back in proper English, shouldn't we switch over to bourbon? Just saying.
Good point.
Maybe.
Yeah. Anyhow, so John Coombe, he's leaving Facebook. And for those of you that don't know who I'm talking about, this is one of the co-founders of WhatsApp. And so when John and his partner, like co-founder, sold the company to Facebook. Oh, I just forgot the co-founder's name. Brian Acton. That's it, Brian Acton. So when John Coombe and Brian Acton sold WhatsApp to Facebook, they both got to be on Facebook's board, and they were both champions for WhatsApp and ensuring that WhatsApp remained a private and secure messaging platform. Even after Facebook bought them, they continued to move forward with their plans and enacted the whole cross-platform true end-to-end encryption. So, you know, that was great. But Brian, he left last November, and John has announced that he is leaving sometime in the near future. The reason he is leaving is because he is at odds with the way Facebook wants to exploit WhatsApp, meaning Facebook wants to weaken the encryption and use personal data from your WhatsApp account to, for marketing.
They want to mine it, which is what they do with all the rest of the Facebook info that they have, and presumably the rest of the Instagram info they have, for people who have forgotten that Instagram is in fact a Facebook property.
Right. So this tells me that we need to be concerned about the future of WhatsApp and privacy in the app. So
I agree.
So I've kind of nailed it there.
Well, mostly because it almost doesn't matter what Facebook says at this point, as far as I'm concerned, because here's why. Because first of all, every once in a while, Facebook says things about their own technology, about stuff they built, that makes it sound like they don't really understand that technology, whether or not they actually built it. You know, they send someone out to go make some sort of statement, and it sort of seems like that person isn't really fundamentally understanding what it is they're talking about. And the second problem is, even if they say, like, I have to put them in the same as Google, which is like, it doesn't really matter to me what you say. It matters to me what you do. And part of why my Instagram usage personally has dropped off a cliff is because I was barely on Facebook in the first place. And then getting all these reminders on Facebook, like when I do log in, I've got all these notifications stacked up, and they're all stuff like, you haven't posted to Instagram in a while. How come? And I'm like, because you suck and I'm kind of mad at you and you won't give me back a unified reverse chronological timeline. So,
that is frustrating.
I keep complaining about it and you keep not doing anything about it. And until I can go there and get the newest, the next newest, the next newest, instead of one day ago, 20 minutes ago, a week ago ad, then we'll talk. But I find it frustrating. And I almost feel like there's nothing Facebook can say or do at this point except come out and say, we're leaving it alone, and have a bunch of people who actually work at WhatsApp say, all the Facebook people packed up and left, and we're sitting here by ourselves now. Like, as far as I'm concerned, that's the only thing that would be good enough for me, because I feel like what they're really trying to do is just turn it into secure Facebook Messenger, and I can't get behind that.
Well, I have a feeling that what you would like to see happen isn't going to happen. With Brian, with Brian gone and Jan leaving, or Jan leaving, that tells me that Facebook is intent on making WhatsApp something that they can mine for information.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of defeats the purpose of WhatsApp.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know what bothers me? What bothers me, Kelly?
What bothers you, John?
There's big money interest in prying into our personal affairs for mining. And there's big money interest in doing the same thing for law enforcement. And how to disentangle those two in a proper way,
mm-hmm.
I haven't figured out.
Well, whoever does figure that out is going to make a lot of money.
Money
well,
corrupts.
Some people
big
have.
Money corrupts, absolutely.
Some people have figured it out, though. Like, if you're if you're using WhatsApp because you think it is secure, there's other stuff that you could use if the security of your data is in question. So sure. There's things like Signal and Telegram that are better alternatives, mostly because Facebook isn't trying to figure out how to get their mitts on that data, number one.
Yet.
But eventually big money will swallow up these companies.
I don't know. I feel like some of them don't care if they make money. They care that your stuff is your own. And that seems pretty legit. Like, you know.
I don't know. I mean, with the people's tendency to make assumptions and not be aware of the technical nuances, it's hard for companies that make a stand to survive against the cultural meme of the big money products.
Right.
So people tend to naturally migrate towards the most popular thing on Facebook, caring or not caring about whether their privacy is being mined or not. And that makes life difficult for the companies that take a stand, except for Apple, which has enough muscle to make it stick. But then the big money interests get entangled with the government, and then you have the government wanting to know about your information as well for the sake of, you know, national security, and where that line is drawn and how you have perspective about the important elements on each side of that line, that's getting really blurred.
Yeah, it's go ahead, Kelly.
Well, part of it is that Signal, like the first one I think of is Signal. Because Signal's not a commercial organization. They're not in it to make any money. They never set out to make any money. They set out to give people an alternative secure messaging system because not everything is encrypted like iMessages. So, mm-hmm. You know, if what you're worried about is security, like honestly, Signal's the way to do it because WhatsApp, as we're talking about right now, is owned by Facebook. So really that air quote security, I have to air quote because it's just a question of time. And second of all, Telegram, the last time I read stuff about Telegram, on your phone, the information is secure, but Telegram servers are not encrypted. So if what you're worried about is secure messaging, that's different. Then like, I just want to use something so that I'm not counting against my limited SMS message count or something like that. Like, that's a different story. But like, one of the things like John was talking about, you know, big money, like Signal was never meant to be that, which is part of why I feel like that's a little bit more legit if you're looking for a way to send people information that you don't necessarily want the rest of the world to see. So I'm curious where this is gonna go, but that's definitely one that I think about a lot, because like, I never got into WhatsApp in the first place, and then Facebook bought them and I was like, well, now I don't have to.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and some of us, we use multiple platforms depending on who we're chatting with. So mm-hmm. WhatsApp for me has been great because I've been able to have end-to-end encrypted conversations with people outside of Apple's ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And it's a really popular program, so it's been great for that. And right. Now, I guess I need to be watching for app updates to WhatsApp and for terms of service changes so mm-hmm. that I know when it's no longer going to be something that
I that will not be clear.
It will not.
The update will say bug fixes and performance improvements. And so you'll update, and then you'll find out the performance improvements are a little one-sided.
Yeah. Well, and what will happen is, you know, you'll go to the, like, if you don't have automatic updates turned on, you'll go to it and there will be three lines and it'll be, you know, security upgrades, bug fixes, and the third line, which won't show up, like, if you're just looking at the list view, will say, like, installing this update implies agreement acceptance of the updated terms of service.
Oh yeah, there it is on page 127.
Yeah, and it's going to be filed in the folder right behind, you know, the Vogon paperwork for the intergalactic bypass. So you're going to end up with a, you know, like, this is going to be subtle, and I really hope that not because you shouldn't do it, not because you should stop using WhatsApp, but just like all the security stuff we talk about here, you should be aware of it. It's more a matter of informing people that this is a thing that's happening than it, you know, what you do with that information is completely up to you, but it's important that people know that this is a thing that is coming so that they can prepare for it however they see fit, whether it's not care and click okay, or whether it's migrate out of that to a different application that's going to actually do what they want. Because if their purpose of using it is encrypted conversations, that's probably going to change.
Well, that brings up a good point, Kelly, is that the process of understanding how this works is kind of complicated. We were talking this morning about how to set up a home Wi-Fi network and understanding the walls and the signal levels and what procedure you go through and whether you need a mesh. The same thing is true of these apps. You need to read. You need to be alert to updates. It's all a very convoluted process. We do it for a living, but I think people who are just ordinary consumers who don't dig in just go along merrily and say, well, mm-hmm. you know, WhatsApp is secure, and they'll argue about it. And then they'll take the next update and move merrily along. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
And that's the part that has frustrated me about so much of this, is that it takes somebody for whom this is their idea of a good time is, you know, running a diff on two different sets of terms of service so that you can find out what changed, or
people
digging in and really...
That.
There are
remember
people
there
who
was
do.
A Star Trek episode in which the ship's computer was called upon to evaluate a treaty uh-huh. between the Federation and somebody else and look for loopholes. Remember that?
Vaguely? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're not far from that. That's the thing that is the most frustrating for me, is that a lot of this stuff doesn't end up being plainly spoken so that people who need to understand it can understand it. And by that, I mean everybody.
Do you think AIs will come to the rescue?
No.
That depends on your perspective. From the AI's perspective, yes.
I have a podcast about Westworld, so I'm not inclined to think that the robots are going to have humans' best interests at heart.
Well, maybe I can call up an AI, you know, like I call up Siri and say, hey, I've got a job for you. Well, I allocate an hour of CPU time and do this task for me. And the AI says, on it, boss.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, well,
that
would be. Where we are today is my power went
not
out.
Not there.
Yeah, not there. My power went out this morning for a couple minutes. When it came back on, my robot vacuum freaked the crap out. It totally lost its map of my place and just on its own started roaming around, remapping the whole thing. It spent over an hour roaming around before I realized it was flat out lost. I mean, it could navigate my place pretty efficiently because it
is that done. Was that because the battery died or because there was a power spike? Or normally when you shut it down, it should remember all of that. What happened?
Well, the robot wasn't even shut down because it has its own battery. So all I can figure is that the power outage happened at just the right time and in just the right way to invoke a bug. But the point is, I eventually had to go shut the robot off, pick it up, and put it back in its charger.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was killing its battery, and it could not find its way home. So that's where we are today with
Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah.
So what Jeff is saying is he feels pretty confident that the robot uprising is not going to be this summer.
No, it is not going to be this summer. Yeah. I want to talk about something else before we wrap up. So I'm just moving us on. And
all right.
I want to talk about what was at least last year or last December being referred to as Project Marzipan. And this is the rumored project that Apple has going on where they are doing something that unifies macOS and iOS for apps. The assumption has been that let's see.
The assumption had been that it was going to be in macOS 10.14 this summer.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. I totally got derailed for a second in my brain. So yeah. So the assumption was it's coming this year, and that it's going to be a unified application system, meaning that you write an app as a developer, and that app ends up running on macOS or iOS. So you write once, compile, and it just runs everywhere. My assumption, based on what little information we've had, is that what would really happen is that Apple would release new developer tools, and these new developer tools would have a common framework for developing the foundation of an application. So you could create that, and then you create your interface for each device, and then when you compile out, it compiles the right kind of code for each platform.
Right. Common source code, differing targets.
Right. So what we have now is John Gruber at During Fireball basically validating my hypothesis. And he says that he thinks it's actually Apple working on what he's calling declarative control APIs. So you write your code, and then all these interface elements and stuff get defined through this API. So you say, I want a button here.
Okay.
And then when you compile the app, what you get is the right interface element in the right place. So if it's for the Mac, you get a button you can click. Mm-hmm. If it's on iOS, you get an interface element that's appropriate for tapping.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said...
And then you get an app that's like, you know, screen size. And like, if it's the Mac version, you don't necessarily have to worry about rotation with it like you do on iOS and things like that makes sense to me. I could never get behind all of that hysteria over Marzipan in the first place for that reason, because it didn't sound like an Apple-y thing to do.
Well, if you interpret it the way I did and the way that
that makes sense.
Validating now, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And then having it come not this year, but Gruber's saying it's in 2019, so it'll be part of iOS 10.15 and iOS 13.
That timing makes perfect sense now in hindsight. Okay. If you think about the timeline, Apple had previously announced that, you know, macOS 10.13 ICR runs 32-bit apps. And they mentioned that the next version of macOS 10.14 would be the last version that would run 32-bit apps without compromise. And so one can imagine that the version after that isn't going to run 32-bit apps at all. And I perceive this movement towards 64 bits and having 64-bit APIs across the board is the gateway for this declarative system.
Oh,
so the timing makes perfect sense in hindsight.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the piece that I've almost finished writing, it will get published after we finish recording the show today. I say that all these pieces coming together indicate that 2019, when macOS 10.15 comes out, that's when macOS goes 64-bit only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then what a joy it'll be to have pull out a MacBook Pro or a MacBook and have your favorite iOS apps running.
Except you won't have your favorite iOS apps running.
Mm-mm.
You'll have your macOS apps running.
They're making it easier for somebody to make to who
well
favorite, Mac favorite apps
favorite iOS apps targeted for Mac.
I will accept that.
Yeah, this is so that people who make your favorite iOS apps who you've been begging for a Mac version, or people who make your favorite Mac apps who you've been begging for an iOS version, it's lowering the bar for that to happen. Now, my only question about the if that interpretation is in fact correct, what I want to see out of this is App Store fallout. I want it to be so that if I buy the Mac version of a thing, I can also get easily, I can obtain the iOS version of a thing. If they both exist, I would like there to be a tiny bit of awareness of the other App Store.
There's so much infrastructure, Kelly. There's the App Store infrastructure to do exactly what you defined. Mm-hmm. There's the Xcode infrastructure for doing the compilation. There's mm-hmm. the declarative control. There's the structure of macOS 10.15 mm-hmm. and iOS 13.
13.
And so there's all these pieces to put into place. So it's not surprising that it's not going to be a thing here in the next month.
We heard rumblings about it a year ago, and the rumblings we're hearing now say it's going to be another year. So that seems like a lot of time to be able to implement some of this.
I'm not surprised, though. That's a lot of work cut out for Apple to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, and then to give developers a head start, you know, tools to get started and be ready. Mm-hmm. So it seems like a reasonable timeline to me.
Me too.
And me too. And I'm going to wrap us up because we're out of time. Kelly, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
It's great to have both of you on the show. And listeners, thank you for being here. I'm so glad you are joining in and listening. And we'll see you again tomorrow.